If you would open up to Genesis chapter 47, Genesis chapter 47. Last week, as we went through Genesis 46, to really see finally this reunion after 22 years of for Joseph to be reunited with his father, Jacob, and now here down in Egypt. And Jacob's age, we'll see it in this chapter. He talks about that he's 130 years old. And to think in terms of here he is, and since the time that he was 108, he had not seen his favorite son. Not that personal favoritism is what God desires, but to think in terms of where he's at. And they talked about in chapter 46 that whenever Joseph and Jacob saw each other, it says he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a long time. And we can probably only imagine what that long time was. But the idea is they were very touched to see each other again. And so after that, Joseph told his brothers, he said, just know that Egyptians loathe shepherds. They are not fond of them for whatever reason. He says, so whenever you go before Pharaoh, just tell them that you're shepherds and they won't want to have anything to do with you. So he lays it out, and really in terms of what's being laid out, providing a plan and a path. Chapter 47 opens up this way. He says, then Joseph went in and told Pharaoh and said, my father and my brothers and their flocks and their herds and all that they have come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen. And Goshen was the best of the land. It was the fat of the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh had even instructed Joseph before, I want you to take them to this land. So they've come down out of Canaan. They've come to Goshen. And in Hebrew or Egyptian, Goshen literally means drawing near. And you understand that's exactly what is going on for Joseph. God is drawing near all of his relatives in terms of the 66 to 70 family members that have come down out of Egypt now to be there with him, to be drawn near. And so they've come down, they're in the land of Goshen, which is kind of a region idea of Goshen. Verse 2. First of all, you're going to see this meeting where Joseph's going to take five representatives of his brothers to go before Pharaoh. And then there'll be a second time it talks about where he's going to bring his own father to Pharaoh to see them. And as we mentioned earlier, if you remember the way that Joseph describes his relationship with Pharaoh to his brothers, he says, I'm like a father to Pharaoh, which tells you that Joseph is probably older than Pharaoh is. And typically Pharaoh's, the lineage is handed down from father to son. So for nearly every Pharaoh, their father has died. So they were looking for a father figure. So here it is. Verse 2, he, talking about Joseph, took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. It doesn't give you any information about which one of his five brothers that are there. And so it just leaves it that way. That's all the information we need. Verse 3, then Pharaoh said to his brothers, and notice this is Pharaoh addressing these five brothers of Joseph. He says, we have come to sojourn. Verse 3, then Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? This is exactly what Joseph had prepared them for. Nothing like saying, he's going to ask the question, you just give him the answer and we'll go on. Then he says, and they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, both we and our fathers. In other words, the generations before us. He says, this is what we've done. We've handed this trade down from generation to generation to generation. Because sure enough, wasn't Abraham, didn't he take care of flocks? He did. Isaac, same thing. Jacob, yes. Now 12 sons, similar. Here they are. Then verse 4. Then they said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please let your servants live in the land of Goshen. Now, I want you to notice, whenever Joseph told him, he said, just tell them that you're shepherds. And then sure enough, here it is, we're shepherds. And then all of a sudden, they start going into all these other things. Isn't that the way it goes sometimes? You know, here's a perfect answer, just give them the answer. Oh, and there's more we want to say. Okay, well, thank you. Then verse 5, Notice how Pharaoh responds to all this. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them live in the land of Goshen, and if you know any capable men among them, then put them in charge of my livestock." What is Pharaoh basically saying to Joseph's brothers and to Joseph? What does he want to have happen? All right, the very last part is about caring for his own livestock. He says, "I want to give you the best of the land." Now, I want you to think about for Pharaoh, how is Egypt looking right now? You know that this is at least the second year of 7 years of famine. It could have, in terms of about the time passing to get Jacob back down to where they are, it is possible it could be a little bit more than 2 years of the famine. But to go, the land is really looking pretty bad. And out of all the people who are the natives of Egypt, you would imagine that Pharaoh would want to take care of his own people first. But that's not at all the way he sees this situation, is it? He says, "I recognize that without the God of Joseph, where we would be." And so he takes the opportunity to say, "I want to take care of your family. And there's 70 of them that have come down," is the number that it gives. We know it's really more like 66 because of Joseph and his family being counted as four in that. But going, "Here they've come," and to go, "I want to make sure they're given the best of the land." And if you look back a couple chapters, he even says, they're given the fat of the land, which is the very best of the best. And to go, in what way could he honor Joseph any higher? Say, "I want to take care of all of your family. The young, the old, there were little ones who were with him." And so you see this picture, and he says, "The land of Egypt is at your disposal. Anything you want, you can have." Can you imagine being treated that way when you come to a foreign nation? For them to say to you and your family, "Anything that we have in our country is at your disposal." That's hard for me to imagine. But that's the way Pharaoh treats Joseph's family. Now, if you notice here, he says, "Let them live in the land of Goshen," which is exactly what Joseph said was going to happen. He knows what's going on. He says, "And if you know any capable men among them," I think that's interesting. You know, out of all your brothers, are there any capable men? He says, "And if they are very capable," he says, "I want them to take care of my livestock." Which at this point in time, I mean, as famine starts to really come on strong, who else suffers other than just the human beings? I mean, you start to imagine, I mean, if you think about the dream that Pharaoh had, the second dream, about the cows, how did they look? I mean, they looked pretty rough looking. I mean, you can almost imagine, and I mean, maybe you've seen some cows like this. I know whenever I was over on another continent to see cows, it's like you could literally count the ribs of all those animals because that's just how malnourished they looked. And to think, here they are, and he says, "Well, they take care of mine." He says, "If there's anyone capable," he says, "let them take care of mine," which sounds like, you know what, if this is what you all have done as a family for generations and generations, you're probably going to be the best ones I could find to do this. And so he says, "Would you take care of my livestock?" Which sounds like, this is very fitting. You're giving us the fat of the land, the best of the land. The least we could do is take care of your livestock. Then, verse 7. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob and presented him to Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Now, you notice what just naturally comes out of Jacob. He blesses Pharaoh. You imagine, here my son is, number two in the nation, and he doesn't look at Pharaoh and go, "You know what, if you were gone, then my son might be number one." He blesses him. As if to say, if someone had taken care of your son or your daughter, let's put that in there too, if they had taken care of your child, how would you feel about them? Would you have any gratitude? I think we would, or we should at least. Then Jacob blesses Pharaoh. You're going to see this happen again, just a couple of verses. Verse 8, Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many years have you lived? What a fun way to have a conversation really start. After you've been blessed by Jacob, well, how old are you? You kind of wonder how he walked in there, how he made it. And if you remember these things too, when you start looking at this, you remember how Jacob walks? He's got a limp. Remember he had wrestled with an angel of God and he walked away with a hip injury. And so now here he is coming in, and as he presents himself before Pharaoh, it's not as if that's going to be hidden. And Pharaoh asks a common question. And to say, how many years have you lived? He's probably already pretty aware of Joseph's age. He's about 39 years old at this point. Remember, 30 years old when he's taken into Pharaoh's house, 7 years of the abundance. Now we're at least 2 years into the famine, so he's about 39. And to go, all right, I know one of your sons is 39. I've been introduced to 5 of your other sons, depending on which ones they were, a little bit of an age separation. Then here's Jacob's response, verse 9. So Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained the years that my fathers lived during the days of their sojourning. Now, verse 9 may sound kind of odd to us. How many of you think if you lived to 130, you'd say, my years have been few? I mean, currently, according to what I could look at today, the oldest person on the planet is about 116 years old. And they're not necessarily in the best of health. But going, here's somebody being 130 years old and saying, my years on earth have been few. But I want you to think about the perspective. What he says here in verse 9, he says, nor have they attained the years of my fathers lived among the days of their sojourning. And let's just go back just 1 and 2 generations. Do you remember how old Jacob's father Isaac was when he died? 180 years old is how old Isaac lives to be. Isaac's father, Abraham, remember how old he was whenever he died? 175. So all of a sudden, 130 is not looking as old as it used to, right? He said, I haven't lived to be as old as my fathers. Like of Shem and Japheth? Right. They live in like their 600s, I think. I'd have to go back and look it up. But you start noticing through here of going, there's been this long tail off since the flood. There's another generation that gets pretty long because God's allowing them time to repopulate the earth in one sense, whether that's the reason or not. And then it starts to tail off on further down. So here it is as it continues on. He says, my sojourning is 130. Now, I just want to kind of give some clarity here. Through the past probably 3 or 4 months, anytime we came up with looking at Joseph's age, always told you to add 91 to it, and you could get his father's age. Well, it's because I'd read ahead, and it's right here, right? Because Joseph's 39, and his father's 130, so it's very simply said they're always going to be 91 years apart, give or plus or minus one. Give me a margin of error. So he says, here they are. He's 130. He says, few and unpleasant have been the years of my life. Why have Jacob's years been so unpleasant? What are some of the things that Jacob had been through? All right. He thought his son Joseph had been killed some 22 years ago. Had to leave his father and mother going up to look for a wife. Brother wanted to kill him. Esau wanted him dead. Laban cheats him in terms of even with who he marries. Nothing like the honeymoon switch. And going, here are all these different things that he's gone through, but I want you to realize at this point, why was Jacob's life so hard and unpleasant? Mostly because of his own doing. He buys his brother's birthright. He steals his brother's blessing by the cunning deceit that he gets from the instruction, even from his own mother. All of a sudden, he goes up, and here he's there. And of course, he wants to marry Rachel, but he gets Leah instead. And all of a sudden, you see, as he goes up there, you see a refinement that takes place within him. But then all of a sudden, when he gets back home, even up there, he has a favorite wife. He treats Rachel different than he treats the other three. When he gets home, he shows favoritism to Joseph. That's why his brothers hate him so much, and probably why they even sell him off. Here he is saying, my years have been few, but I'm an old man. I'm 130 years old, and they've been unpleasant. And to go, if you really took the time to think about it, it's been unpleasant because of my own stupid choices. And you think about that. Do you want to get to a ripe old age and look back at life and go, it's been very unpleasant, mostly because of my own faithless choices? There will be a lot of people who die that way. And a lot of it will be by their own choices. Not all of them, but a lot of them. When you don't choose to really put the things of God first, to show equality among your own family, when you don't choose to be honest, but instead you choose to be deceitful and cunning. Here he is, and now he stands before Pharaoh, and he says, the years of my sojourning are 130. It says, few and unpleasant have been the years of my life. He's being very transparent, don't you think? He says, nor have they attained the years of my fathers. He says, I'm not 180. I'm not 175. He says, during the days of their sojourning. Verse 10. And it says it again, because he did it again. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Once again, is he grateful for what Pharaoh's done? Yeah. Now, I want you to imagine, if Joseph is seen as a father to Pharaoh, what does Jacob look like? He looks rather old. Chuck. Right, and he's really been refined. I hope you've seen that as we've gone through the story of the life of Jacob, and it's really changing what he sees. So then, Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence. And so Jacob leaves, and of course, look at where they're going to dwell, verse 11. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gained them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had ordered. Ramesses is a land, but it's also more so a city. Ramesses is going to show up four times in Scripture, one time here, another time in Exodus 12, and two more times in Numbers 33. It's going to be that in 430 years from this point, whenever the children of Israel are going to come out of Egypt, they're going to leave from this very place, Ramesses. Going to be mentioned in Exodus, going to be mentioned in Numbers twice. And they go, here it is. And Ramesses in the Egyptian language literally means the son of Ra. And Ra, of course, is the Egyptian sun god, who was Pharaoh supposed to be the earthly son of this Egyptian demigod or false god. He says, so they go to the land of Ramesses. They're in Goshen. Goshen's a place of drawing near. Verse 12. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to their little ones. He says, here's what's being provided for their family. They're being utterly taken care of. Who already knew this famine was coming? Joseph knew it. And how did Joseph know it? Because a dream that came to Pharaoh. And how did Pharaoh know it? Because God gave him the dream and gave him someone to interpret it by God's own voice. And you realize all these things have come together to provide for God's people. And look at who God has used to get to this end point. God gives a dream to Pharaoh. None of Pharaoh's men could interpret it. And so all of a sudden, here's a cupbearer who's right there beside of Pharaoh's hand, and he says, "Forgive me, I've forgotten about something I should have remembered a long time ago. There is a Hebrew man who crossed over," Hebrew means, he says, "who crossed over, and he can tell you the meaning of this dream." And so he calls for Joseph to come up, and Joseph's first response is, look, interpretations of dreams don't come from men, they come from God. And sure enough, Pharaoh tells the dream, Joseph interprets it exactly the way that God had given him this meaning, and now look at all that's been provided for God's own people, because he made a promise to Jacob and to Isaac and to Abraham about a land that's going to be theirs. And he even told Abraham specifically, your descendants are going to go down to the land of Egypt. They're going to be there for 400 years. Look at how far back God gave this to, even to Abraham in a dream. But talking to Abraham even face to face. And you realize all these things were in place just to take care of his people. Nothing like God to have a plan established hundreds of years before just to provide for his people. Let's see, what parallel are you thinking of right now? How long ago was the plan of Jesus brought together? We know from what Peter writes, before the foundations of the world, it was already the plan that it would be by the blood of Jesus that his people would be saved. And you look at how many different things God brought together so that Jesus would come to earth and give us a way to be taken care of, not just physically, but to be taken care of spiritually and eternally. Why do we ever doubt God's timing? It's already worked out. If we'll just be faithful. Chuck. By a long shot. They definitely do. And to submit ourselves, surrender our will to his. So, you notice here in verse 12, God's people are totally taken care of. It's as if, let me show you what's going on in Goshen, and then now let's address what's going on in the rest of Egypt, because there's still an ugly old famine going on. What about them? Well, God's got a plan. He's working already. Verse 13. Now there was no food in all the land because the famine was very severe. So the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. Notice how far spread is this famine. It's not just limited to Egypt. It even covers all the land of Canaan. So is there any desire for God's people to go, hey, let's just go back to Canaan? None whatsoever. We are perfectly provided for here in Goshen. Verse 14. So, what's the plan? Joseph gathered all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So, what's the first thing that gets all gobbled up? The money. Everybody came to Egypt, and they spent their money for food, for grain. And all of a sudden, the famine's still going on. And what do they no longer have? No money. Can you imagine where no money at all? No gold, no silver? And to go, well, we're down to the barter system because we certainly don't have any money anymore. Think about how that would change your life right now if you had no more money, period. You were just left with trading the things that you had in your possession. Chuck. And you think, what's money really worth if nobody has it? It's amazing how the financial side of this would go. Verse 15. When the money was all spent, I'm not going to say what I'm thinking. When the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us food, for why should we die in your presence? For our money is gone. What do the Egyptians know? We're at your mercy. If you don't do something for us, then we're just going to die. We'll starve to death. He says, all of our money's gone. He says, what should we do? And here's Joseph. Verse 16. Then Joseph said, give up your livestock, and I will give you food for your livestock since your money is gone. You remember that little statement that Pharaoh made at the end of talking to his five brothers? If you got any capable men who can take care of livestock, maybe they can take care of my own. And how many he had at that point and how many he's about to have is drastically different. Doesn't like going, will you take care of all the livestock and all the land? Because look at what happens. Verse 17. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses and the flocks, sheep and goats, and the herds, cows, oxen, and the donkeys. And he fed them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. All of a sudden, now you're bringing all your, he says, horses, donkeys, sheep, goats, cattle, oxen, and trading them in, welcome to the barter system, for grain to eat, which is something because what did your animals really have to live on anyway? They're going to be better taken care of in Pharaoh's house than they would in your house because he can actually feed them. And you realize, and it just so happens, what does this do for the herdsmen of the sons of Jacob? There's plenty of work to go around. Oh, yeah, we'll take care of all these, but they're going to be Pharaoh's. Then, verse 18, when that year was ended, they came to him the next year. And if you notice, we're starting to rack up years here. And said to him, we will not hide from my Lord that our money is all spent, and the cattle are my Lord's. There is nothing left for my Lord except our bodies and our lands. Here's all we have left is ourself and our land. And how did the land look? Pretty worthless. It's not as if it's growing any crops on it yet. And so he says, what can we do? Take us. Take our land. Because it's not going to do us any good. It's a famine. And if you noticed in the earlier chapters, they weren't even planting anymore. They realized that was a losing case. It's not even worth the effort. And so here it is, and you realize how destitute it is. Verse 19, they go on. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we and our land will be slaves to Pharaoh. So give us seed that we may live and not die, and that the land may not be desolate. He says, they go before, will you just give us seed? Now, once again, realize we're working down the line here, and what they propose, and then I want you to notice what Joseph does. They're saying, we'll be your slaves, our land will be yours. He says, just give us some seed that we can plant. Maybe something will come up and we'll have something to eat. And the money that you give us for the land. Verse 20. So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for every Egyptian sold his field. Did you pick up that? Every Egyptian sold his field because the famine was severe upon them. Thus the land became Pharaoh's. How massive is this takeover? Complete and total. Pharaoh has all the money. Pharaoh has all the livestock. Pharaoh has all the land. And this is all because of God's plan. Because if Joseph wasn't there used by God to interpret the dream of Pharaoh, would Pharaoh have been prepared for this moment? In no way. And would there have been a refuge for God's people to go and remain? No. This is all by God's hand. Egypt. Excuse me. Eric. If you, what Eric's question is, during those 7 good years, they were told to put back 20%. So you end up with 140%, which is almost a year and a half's worth of grain. If you consider that every year of the good years is an average year. But remember, they're in abundance for 7 years. So if you have an abundant number and then 20%, you end up with more than what you would need for 1 year. So that's how it works out. Right. And for the first part, things do happen. And then all of a sudden, as they get into the famine, they realize there's even, as it's written earlier, they're not even harvesting anymore. And so you see some of those cuts. So whenever you start to see here about this total takeover, God, what you see God doing with Egypt is doing this and raising them up from being average to where they're going to be the greatest empire on the planet. Because of this sheer takeover, because of what God has done. Now, for a while. And of course, who's going to take down that big empire? God is, and he's going to show his almighty hand to his own people. All part of this. Now, notice how this continues forward. Verse 21. As for the people, he removed them to the cities from one end of Egypt's border to the other. He starts to move the people around to where they go to these cities. And if you think about the storehouses that were built, it's a lot easier to feed people when they're all around where the storehouses are. And if you see, Joseph's taking care of them. Verse 22, there is one exception. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had an allotment from Pharaoh, and they lived off the allotment which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. So the priests of Pharaoh, they don't have to sell their land. They have an allotment from Pharaoh. And also, if you remember, who did Joseph marry? One of the priest's daughters. So you can understand, he's still taking care of his own family, in one sense. So, as it continues on, verse 23, he says, then Joseph said to the people, behold, I have today brought you and your land. I have today bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you may sow the land. Now here it is together. This is a big change here. Going, all right, let's give you seed now. Now, at what point they are in these 7 bad years, this sounds like we're getting toward the end. Like maybe this is year 6 or 7 of this. And so now we've come to this part. Everything's been taken over by Pharaoh. And now he says, here's going to be what we do. Verse 24. At the harvest, you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and 4/5 shall be your own for seed of the field and for your food and for those of your households and as food for your little ones. I hope you can appreciate talking about tax on April 15th, because that's exactly what this is. It's all about saying, I know you're destitute. I know you have nothing of yourself. I know you don't have any land. You don't have any livestock. Oh boy, nothing like farming without livestock. He says, you don't have any money. He says, I'll give you seed, but here's the deal. 20% of what you harvest goes back to Pharaoh. The other 80% you get to keep for yourself, for your family, for your little ones, and you can use it to sell and make money. Look at what he's giving them. He's not saying, well, let me just give you everything. He says, I'll give you the seed, but you're going to have to do the work. And sure enough, This is how it goes on. And I want you to notice their attitudes about this. Verse 25. So they said, you have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's slaves. What are they so excited to be? Pharaoh's slaves. I want you to think about this picture. A people who recognize, says, you have saved our lives. Do they recognize that if Joseph didn't do this, what would happen to them? What would be the outcome? There would be, it would just be a heap of bodies, just dead all over Egypt. And they say, because you've done this, we will live. We are so grateful to be Pharaoh's slaves. We get to keep. Right. And you notice how he lays it out. Now, real quickly, look at verse 26. Joseph made it a statute concerning the land of Egypt, valid to this day. Now, when is this day? When did Moses write it? While they were in the wilderness. So even some 400 plus years later, this law was still intact. Can you imagine being the children of Israel who've been delivered out of Egypt, and you walked out of there with plunder, because all that plunder, he was going to give it to his people. God's going to give it to his people. And so they walk out with all these things. They go, look at what happened. And then going, and it was still in play even to the day we left. Moses writes, to this day, that Pharaoh should have the fifth, only the land of the priests did not become Pharaoh's. And so you look at this whole picture together, and I want you to see this one final thought of going, the excitement of being a slave of Pharaoh. Because we need to be just as excited about being a slave of Jesus, a slave of God. Look over at Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6. Look at verse 16. Paul says, do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves of the one whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death, or of obedience resulting in righteousness? He says, we're all slaves. Question is, are we a slave of sin or a slave of God? So he says, of obedience. He says, resulting in righteousness. Verse 17, but thanks be to God that though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed. And having been freed from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. Are we as excited about being slaves of righteousness and getting to imitate Jesus and getting to live life by the way that he lived life, recognizing that he has delivered us from death even more so than those Egyptians were delivered from death by Joseph and Pharaoh's decree? Because whenever you look at this picture, then you come to verse 19. He says, I'm speaking in human terms. He says, I'm trying to put this in terms you understand. He says, because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves to impurity and to lawlessness, he says, resulting in further lawlessness, it just got worse. He says, so now present your members as slaves to righteousness, resulting in sanctification. And what is sanctification? It's about perfecting holiness. It's about drawing near to become more and more like Jesus and recognizing that drawing to be more like him and imitating him is where you really find life in Jesus. From the moment we were bought with his blood, when we were baptized into Christ and our sins were all washed away, we became a slave of God, here referred to as a slave of righteousness. Who am I going to listen to? Am I going to let righteousness and God and Jesus be my master? Because they're all going to command the same thing. And to go, and look at the outcome. I get to become more and more like Him. Then real quickly, notice these next three verses. Verse 20. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. If you're a slave of sin, does any of your righteousness count? Oh, but they're a good person. Oh, but they do. They're really kind. It doesn't count a thing. Then verse 21. Therefore, what benefit were you then deriving from the things of which you are now ashamed? For the outcome of those things is death. But now, having been freed from sin and enslaved to God, you derive your benefit resulting in sanctification. And what's the outcome of sanctification? Eternal life. You think anybody's going to regret being a slave of God? Being a slave of righteousness? Choosing what's right to do even in the midst of difficulty and hardship? Anybody going to regret that? You certainly won't. You never will. Because the outcome of sanctification and righteousness is eternal life in Jesus. Remember how happy those slaves were because of Joseph and Pharaoh. And don't forget to be just as happy about the blessings we have in Christ.